go by just last week, and this is not the first time this has happened. It was playing Christmas music.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it hit me right away that, one, it's, I mean, it's public domain yet, but why would an ice cream truck ever have Christmas music?
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
So, I mean, is there ever going to be a time where this is going to be seasonal, yet people are going to want to buy ice cream off of the street?
I suppose in Australia, maybe, it would make sense to have an ice cream truck that played Christmas music.
See, that it would make sense.
It was lost. It was the GPS.
It is sad. So you're listening to Ask an Atheist, our number 253-584-1480. I am Mike Gillis. Joining me in the studio this week, Deanna Joy.
Hello.
And also, blogger extraordinaire Greta Christina.
Hi there.
Hi, welcome to Ask an Atheist. So what we usually do is Sam likes us to mention that it is 75 days till the next end of the world. Ugh, sick of talking about this guy. Wish he would drop. Okay.
Yeah, it's October 22nd. Is that the case?
October 21st, I believe.
October 21st. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm not going to be holding my breath, but I'll let you move on. If you don't want to talk about this anymore, I'm sure our listeners
are tired. New opportunities for parties, I'm game.
Oh, that's true. I'll start planning.
All right, so we're going to go right into my favorite new segment. I like to call Scripture Says What? So basically, we focus on the funny, the scary, and the just plain bizarre parts of our holy books. We're not just talking about the Bible. We're talking about the Quran, the Book of Mormon, Dianetics, Bhagavad Gita, Chick Tract, I guess.
Ooh, I can't wait for those.
And just to let people know, yes, we're poking fun, because there's a lot of really stupid things in these books. But also, we want to highlight that people have a tendency to treat these scriptures like software license agreements. They just go, I'm not going to read all this. They just click, they scroll to the bottom real quick and click, I agree. And we're going to say, you know what? You can't do that. There's some funny fine print in there. So, this week we're going to go to 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 23 through 25. Then he went up there to Bethel, and as he was going up the way, young lads came out of the city and mocked him and said to him, go up, you bald head. Go up, you bald head. And when he looked behind him and saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord. That's in all caps, by the way. Then two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 lads of their number. And he went from there to Mount Carmel, and from there he returned to Samaria.
This freaks me out. It really does. Bears! Two female bears, too. Why did the writers choose two female bears? Or why did God choose two female bears? And, I mean, where did these 42 children come from, first of all? And then, were they so horrible just by mocking the prophet that they had to be rendered to bits? Oh!
And I'll talk about a disproportionate response. It's like, you know, putting somebody in the electric chair for jaywalking. It's, and you know, not to mention the whole idea that mocking somebody and making fun of somebody should be punished at all, because, you know, we obviously value the idea of free speech, but the idea that you should punish making fun of somebody by tearing them apart by bears?
Oh my God. And like, I mean, execution's bad enough, but that's torture.
And the really weird thing that hits me is how many kids were in this gang? They're just sitting around looking to mock a bald guy. Maybe I'm just sensitive against this sort of thing, but it says 42 of their number, so it sort of implies that it didn't kill all of them.
Yeah.
But were they just standing there? I mean, a bear is pretty big, and they're pretty fast for their size, but how did it kill 42 people?
You know, that's a good point. Maybe the bears ran around hamstringing the children first, and then, you know, after they'd gotten the 42 of them down, then they went around and tore them to bits at their leisure.
Well, clearly they were magic bears. They were magic bears because they were sent by the Lord, and therefore the Lord could do anything, and he could have just smote these children, but of course he had to send bears to do it. And here's what gets me about this, is that it doesn't seem to be about any sort of real sense of justice or goodness, because, you know, killing children by being torn apart by bears for saying that somebody's bald, that's pretty disproportionate. It's very much about making you feel how powerful God is. It's not about, you know, it's not about making you think, oh, God is so just and merciful and wonderful. It's just about God is a really scary guy and you shouldn't mess with him.
Absolutely.
That is very childish. I mean, really, it gets down to that sort of angry revenge, like somebody's calling me names. I wish a bunch of bears would you.
Yeah.
That really is childish.
That's so, like those threats on the American Atheist pages, you know?
So there's, I mean, it's bizarre, and you'd think that you could learn to take an insult. I mean, the Bible, doesn't it say at one point that you should be used to people hating you?
Didn't Jesus say something about, you know, when somebody hits you, maybe you turn your cheek or, you know, something like that?
I think there's some fine print that involves hitting bears on.
Yeah, probably.
You should turn your cheek and then curse them and have them be torn apart by bears.
Oh, but, perfect.
I didn't do it. God did it.
God did it. Yeah. I don't hates you, God hates you.
Yeah, seriously. I'm just the messenger here. It just happens that I hate you too, but I can just pass the buck.
Yay, pass the buck.
So if you're somebody who has a piece of scary, funny, or just plain bizarre scripture and you want to send it to us, go to askanatheist.tv, check out the big red candy-like button on the front page, and send it our way. We may read it on the air. You guys want to do some emails?
I would love to.
Absolutely.
All right. Here's our first email, Mark from the internets, and he's throwing something our way. He says it's a cold, hard fact in support of strong atheism.
Ooh.
Now, I think we should probably talk a little bit about definitions real quick. That right. When people say strong atheism, weak atheism, I'm not a big fan of these definitions, but I think what they generally mean is somebody who says, I don't have a belief in a God, being weak atheism, and strong atheism is having a positive belief that there is no God.
That I really am darn sure that there's no God. Yeah.
All right. His email says, hello, I had an interesting conversation today with someone who is getting a PhD in physics. At this point, I was a weak atheist. How could one make the claim that there are definitely no gods and not mildly be insane at the same time? This is what I had been thinking at point since my talk partner said something. He said, and he knew what he was talking about. After all, he was somebody teaching physics for a living. Kind of an appeal to authority. What was that? Teaching physics for a living. That there could absolutely be nothing before the Big Bang. I went further to inquire that this is a scientific fact, and his exact words were, it's a fact. Comes from the very solutions of the cosmological equation. If we are able to describe any God, any at all, who is claimed to have created the universe, that God simply cannot exist as a cold, hard fact. That is, he could not have existed before the Big Bang happened. What do you guys think?
Ooh, well, you know, this would make sense to me if God were proposed to be made of material things, you know, I guess atoms and neutrons, and I'm sorry, I'm not a physicist, but you know, if he was a thing made of thing. But isn't the proposal most of the time that he is outside of space and time, and that he is an immaterial thing that exists but doesn't actually exist of thing? Does that make sense, Greta? You probably know better.
Okay. Well, here I would say two things to this. First of all, I think that the distinction between weak atheist and strong atheist, I think it's something of a murky distinction. It's more of a spectrum. It's, you know, that, you know, the degree to which you're certain that God does or doesn't exist. It's more of a spectrum. It's not like it's clearly defined categories. For one thing, I don't know enough about the physics to know whether this is really true, and I don't want to just trust some guy because he's a physics professor. My understanding from what I have read about physics as a layperson is that there's actually a lot of question about what happened before the Big Bang and whether that even makes sense to say anything about before the Big Bang or whether time itself began at the Big Bang as well as space, and therefore it's a nonsensical concept. But I do think that still is not an argument for the 100% absolute certainty God couldn't exist, because as you just said, you can always say that God is magic, and if God is magic, they can do anything, and the laws of physics don't apply. I just kind of think that that's irrelevant. I think that the question of how certain we are, I mean, the difference between being 99.999% certain that there's no God and being 100% certain that there's no God, I'm not sure that's a really useful distinction.
No.
You know, I'm certain enough, and I'm as certain that there is no God as I am that there are no unicorns. And it's hypothetically possible, you know, unicorns out there, magical beings, completely in defiance of all laws of physics by right. definition, but until somebody can give me some good evidence for that, I'm not going to live my life as if there are unicorns. And I'm really just not sure that the distinction between, quote, weak and strong atheism, I'm not sure that it's that useful. It's mostly a matter of, there's a spectrum, and how certain are you? And I don't know that it's really important to draw a distinction between being 100% certain and being at 99.99% certain.
Well, and to carry it a little further, if though, you know, taking that chance into account that there may be possibly a tiny chance that unicorns exist, what color are the unicorns? What do their horns look like? Who do they want us to worship? Who do they want us to kill? You know, we don't know anything about those unicorns, even if they did exist, to make any useful, you know, tenets about how to live our lives or what to think.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's the same, obviously, about God. Is it's like, even if you concede, which I don't, of course, because I'm an atheist, but even if you concede that there's some supernatural being who wished the universe into existence from nothing, you know,
right.
Even if you concede that, which I don't, that doesn't really tell you anything about how to live your life. That doesn't tell you anything about whether this being is still around, is still paying attention to us. It doesn't tell you anything about whether this being has good moral precepts. It doesn't tell you anything about whether we live after we die. It really tells you nothing other than, gee, okay, some supernatural being wished the universe into existence out of nothing. Even if I concede that, so what? And
right.
Like you say, it doesn't tell you anything about what that God is like. And until you can provide provide some evidence for why your particular God, and this is something I think a lot of religious believers don't grasp. When they say, why don't you believe in God, what they mean is, why don't you believe in my God?
Yes.
And the question of, well, why should I believe in your God as opposed to the God of, you know, Muslims and the God of Hindus and the God of Jews and the God of Wiccans and the God of Christians who don't agree with you, you know, Catholics versus evangelicals, you know, versus Unitarians, whatever, unless you can really give me some reason why your God is the right one and, you know, why their rules and their guidelines are the right ones, that's not still not very helpful to me.
That's the really funny part I find is that they start with, whether you're going to use the Thomas Aquinas proofs for God, first cause or whatever, they always start with exactly that. They think that once they prove that anything, anyone is that God, that it's specifically theirs. The rest is just this huge jump to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And I find that so bizarre. They don't get that. It's the same reason I have an issue with them pulling out Pascal's wager, because the people who throw out Pascal's wager don't use it themselves. That last bit of assumption they hold on to. Well, what if you're wrong? They never ask what if they're wrong.
What if they're wrong about Allah? What if they're wrong about the goddess? What if they're wrong about Ganesh, etc.?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Nobody's wondering. It's like, what if Zardoz is the god? And they never play that game themselves, because if you sometimes ask them that, why aren't you playing this too? Why aren't you simultaneously a Wiccan, a Christian, a Buddhist, a follower of the Norse religion? They go, mine's true. But we're talking hypothetically here. Mm-hmm. What if it's not? What if it's not true? Oh, but it is. It's funny. I don't know if you guys have encountered that, where it seems like religious believers are either unable or unwilling to think hypothetically.
Yeah, it's possible. What I've always seen too is that they're not really thinking about which God has the worst punishment and which God has the best reward for believing in them. Because, you know, if I understand it correctly, I think it's the Muslim hell is worse than the Christian hell. So maybe everybody should be believing in Allah so they don't get the worse hell. Plus, you know, the heaven, you get the virgins or maybe fig, one of the two, when you get there. Either way, you know, that sounds better than the Christian heaven, which is just sitting around on a cloud playing a harp all day.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of incentive for somebody to believe in the Greek God, because everyone goes to the same hell anyways.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So we have another email. This is Luke, also from the internet. He has a question regarding free will. I've been thinking about the concept of free will, and I really don't know what to make of it. I was wondering what you guys and girls thought about it.
Ooh, that's a big, 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 big question, and probably not one we can really get into in a short radio show. Ultimately, I think that we don't understand enough at this point about how consciousness works to really be able to answer that question. I think certainly the question of, you know, if all we are, if our consciousness is entirely just a physical process, if it's made up of atoms and molecules in our brain and the way that our brain fires, the question of, is there free will? Yes, that's a very interesting question. If it's just physical cause and effect, then you could make a case that there is no free will. But something that's occurred to me since I let go of my own religious beliefs is it's not as if religion and spirituality really answers that question either.
No, and you can't hijack it.
It just hijacks it. It just sort of says, well, you have free will because you have a soul, and then question mark. Somehow a soul answers that question of free will, but you still have to ask and answer those questions about free will if we have a soul. You know, how does that make you free? You know, how is it that the ability to, you know, if there's cause and effect that's in the spiritual world, how is that somehow more free than cause and effect in the physical world? And, you know, how is it that having some sort of nebulous non-physical consciousness solves this problem and makes you free in a way that your consciousness being a product of the brain doesn't?
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, if let's say your free will or lack of free will is because of the neuron and the process brain, who's to say that we don't on some level in some way have control of those natural processes? So maybe we're not fully determinists and we're not fully free willers. Maybe we're kind of some weird cross of the two. I found the best discussion of it has been on the Reasonable Doubt podcast. I don't know if you guys have listened, but they have done a couple of episodes about free will and determinism and really gone into all of the different explanations. And I learned a lot, and I'm still, you know, I can't come down on either side. I think it's still an open question, like you said, but it's way cool to think about and listen to and discuss.
I think the thing that really hits me with this question is that a lot of times you hear a lot of stuff from Christians who are simultaneously believing in a God that's omniscient, including seeing the future and knowing before everything that happens before it happened, and somebody believing in free will. And how are those two things possible at the same time?
Oh, right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's especially if the God is omniscient and omnipotent, if the God knows everything and isn't all-powerful, and yet somehow we're free to do what we want to do,
right?
That's not consistent. And something else I actually want to say about this is that a lot of people are presenting this question as if we want there to be free will, and materialism contradicts free will. Materialism, the idea that all there is physical cause and effect, contradicts free will. Therefore, materialism is wrong. Well, we don't get to figure figure out what's true and what's not true based on what we would like to be true. And even if we would like for there to be free will, and even if it does, it is so that materialism means we don't really have free will and it really is just physical cause and effect that was somehow predetermined from the moment of the Big Bang, well, even if we don't like that, it's still true. And we don't get to decide what's true based on what we would like to be true.
Yeah, that's an argument I hear a lot of religious believers throw out there, that I don't want to live in a world where there isn't a God and a heaven. Do we even have a choice of them? I don't want to live in a world where I'm not a billionaire and I can't just throw money around and give it to whoever I want.
I don't want to live in a world where I'm made of ice cream.
The definition of free will that I've always really liked was something Dan Dennett said. He said that free will is the ability to veto your impulses and veto the veto.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so cool. I guess we have time for one more email.
All right.
This is Carolyn from North Augusta, South Carolina. This is about coming out as an atheist. Cool. Dear Ask an Atheist, my name is Caroline. I live in North Augusta, South Carolina. I have been recently deconverted to atheism. I have been wondering since then how to tell my dad. My dad is a fairly strong Christian, not near a fundamentalist, but definitely convinced of the existence of God. I've contemplated taking the band-aid approach and just calling him and telling him I do not live with him a majority of time, or leaving a book like The God Delusion accidentally on the coffee table at his house, but I am not really sure. I would really appreciate any advice you guys might have on this subject.
I like what Dan Savage says, actually, about coming out to your parents as gay, and I think it would probably apply here, is if you really think they're going to have a terribly negative reaction, he says basically give them, you know, the information, you know, you can refer them to PFLAG, or in this case it would be, I don't know, is there a PFLAG for atheists?
We were just talking about that, not that I know of, but...
Yep. But you basically give them a certain amount of time to have their tantrum, to say stupid, offensive things. You give them a time period in which they can, you know, maybe they can even ask you anything you want, and you don't get too mad at them. But then after a while, you got to say, look, if you're not going to be reasonable about this, if you're not going to respect me and love me for who I am anyhow, then you don't get the privilege of having me in your life. So that I think, applies perfectly in this situation as well.
Yeah, no, I would definitely say, and one thing I think is very important when people are coming out is be prepared for it to be very difficult, and don't, for instance, come out if you're financially dependent.
Right.
You know, if you're a high school student or college student and you think that your parents are going to cut you off or kick you out, maybe you should think about the timing of when you come out as an atheist. And I think to some extent that's even true emotionally. If you're really not emotionally prepared for there to be a rift, then you need to think about the timing of that. And of course, that's balanced against, you know, there's the risk of having a rift versus the risk of having a dishonest relationship with your family and always feeling like you have to hide. And of course, there's also the risk that they could find out accidentally, which is worse. So I would say that choose your timing very carefully. Make sure that it's not going to ruin your life to come out. And I think you're right that being prepared for there to be an explosion and being willing for that to happen, at least for a while, and being prepared with materials. You know, there's like Greg Epstein's book, I think it's called Good Without God. Be prepared with materials that aren't necessarily atheist rants about, you know, 100 reasons why God is wrong, but about this is what living like an atheist is like, and this is why we're good, and so
Valerie
on.
Valerie Tirico's book, just recently, it's got a new name. It used to be called The Dark Side. She explains, like, in very personal terms, why the heavy evangelical beliefs she used to have didn't make sense, and you know, some of the things seemed cruel, and it's not, there's nothing in there that I could say would really be offensive. So a book like that, I think, be really good.
Of course, you know, what we think isn't going to be offensive, you know,
that's
the very
true
word and concept of atheism is unfortunately going to be offensive to a lot of people, and we need to be prepared for that. I would also say that at least at first, stay away from the arguments about religion. Focus on why, you can, you know, explain if you want why you're an atheist, but if you start trying to pry them out of their religion, I think that they're going to see that as offensive, as invasive, as, you know, hurtful. And so you need to focus on why atheism is okay and why you're still a good person and why you're still a loving person and why you're still a happy person, why you still have meaning in your life. But that's not the time to be trying to pry them out of their religion. And, you know, just stay calm. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Friendly Atheist blog.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a whole section on the Friendly Atheist blog called Ask Richard, that it's an advice column.
Yes.
And there's a lot of really good writing on that about how to to come out to your family and when and what kinds of conversations to have or what kinds of conversations put, you know, a limit on. And I do think that letting people have their fit at first, but then eventually saying, look, this is who I am, and if you love me, you need to accept that. And I'm not going to participate in a relationship with you if you are going to treat me disrespectfully. There's a point at which you have to do that.
All right. You are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to you in about 2 minutes. Please keep tuned.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington. Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And we are back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And joining us again in the studio is Greta Christina. Greta Christina is the author of Greta Christina's blog. She writes a lot for Alternet and is on the Speakers Bureau of the Secular... What is Secular Student Alliance?
Yes.
I've got to get my acronyms down. And CFI, the Center for Inquiry. Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, Greta Christina.
Yeah, thank you. It's really fun to be here.
So one of the things I saw that you had written about recently was the participation of an atheist group in the San Francisco Pride event, mm-hmm. and a lot of the encounters you had with more liberal-leaning religious believers. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I mean, here's the situation. Is the San Francisco Atheists had a presence in the San Francisco LGBT Pride Parade this year, and because of the way they organized the parade, by sort of thematically, we were grouped with a lot of religious groups, most of whom were obviously very gay-positive, progressive religious groups, and their attitude towards us was, on the surface, very pleasant and very almost over the top pleasant. It's like, oh, yay, atheists, we love atheists, we think atheists are great. And it was a little hard to know how to engage with that, because on the one hand, it's you know, where obviously I like pro-atheist people, and it's, you know, it's nice to not be discriminated against and have people throwing tomatoes at you or whatever. But I've had a lot of conversations with progressive religious believers, and my experience is that progressive religious believers are very positive about atheists until they actually talk with us and find out what we think. And that once they talk with us and find out what we think, a lot of that positivity really goes out the window.
Yeah.
And that there is, and that they make a lot of assumptions about atheists. And one of the big assumptions that progressive atheists make, or excuse me, progressive believers make about atheists, is they assume that we think they're great. They assume that our problem with religion is that it's homophobic and sexist and bigoted and violent and so on. And that the progressive believers who are pro-gay and feminist and ecumenical and just want to hold hands and sing kumbaya, and that we are fine with that. Now, I'm certainly more fine with that than I am with the hardline, extremist, bigoted, violent, etc. versions of religion, but I still have a tremendous problem with any form of religion. You know, mostly being that I don't think it's true. I think it's a mistaken idea about the world, and I do think that even progressive religion can do a certain amount of harm. That
right.
Progressive religion encourages people to believe things based on wishful thinking for which there's no good evidence. It encourages people to believe what they would like to be true rather than what is, there's really good evidence for there to be true. There's a tremendous amount of fraud. There's a tremendous amount of, you know, there's a lot of people out there in the sort of the New Age and progressive Christian world who are bilking people out of a lot of money using these, you know, using religion. And it encourages poor critical thinking. It encourages magical thinking around medicine. It encourages, you know, magical thinking about money. And I do think that it still does certainly less harm than the hard right evangelicals in the Catholic Church and, you know, the Taliban and so on. But it still does harm, and it's still mistaken. And I can certainly get along with these people. I can go to a cocktail party with them. I can have a conversation with them. And I can certainly work as an ally with them on issues that we have in common, such as separation of church and state or same-sex marriage or so on. But I still have a problem with them. And I think that they assume that that's not the case. And once they start getting into a conversation with an atheist and find out, well, actually, we don't think you're right either. And, you know, what was it? There's somebody wrote a comment on the Feringula blog. I think it was Brownian, although I'm not sure about that, who was saying, let's say that I believe that the defroster in my refrigerator is telling me to go take a machine gun and go shoot up the grocery store. Well, that's obviously terrible. Now, let's assume that I think that the defroster in my refrigerator is telling me to go volunteer at a soup kitchen 3 days a week. Well, that's a lovely thing to volunteer at a soup kitchen 3 days a week, but there's still this basic problem, which is that I think that the defroster in the refrigerator is talking to me. And that's mistaken. And if I'm basing my life on the assumption that the defroster in the refrigerator is talking to me, if it then tells me to go shoot up a grocery store, or it then tells me to drain my bank account and, you know, give, you know, dump it in the river, or it tells me to, you know, paint my head with honey and go walk into a bee colony, that's going to be a problem. And if I don't have a foundation of a life lived on evidence and reason and a pretty good evaluation of what is and isn't likely true, then I'm going to run into problems. And I think that that's where relationships with atheists and progressive believers break down, is they think that we're evaluating them on the basis of the conclusions they've come to, which is that same-sex marriage is great and women are equal and that, you know, people of different beliefs shouldn't kill each other. And yes, we agree with those conclusions, but the process by which they've come to those conclusions is still a problem. And they're still cherry-picking just as much as other believers, you know. So, you know, you have fundamentalists they're looking at the Bible and they're ignoring the part that says you shouldn't wear blended fabrics and that you should stone your children if they're disobedient and that you shouldn't plant different crops in the same field. And then they're cherry picking the parts that say, but you should hate homosexuals and women should be obedient to their husband. Okay, they're cherry picking. They're deciding what they want to believe based on what they're deciding what to believe based on what they want to believe. Well, progressive believers are doing exactly the same thing. Right. They're looking at the Bible and they're looking at all the stuff about love and they're saying that you should be loving and you should be peaceful and, you know, you should love your neighbor.
Feed the poor.
You know, feed the poor, blah, blah, blah. And they're ignoring the parts that say that, you know, I've come not to bring peace but a sword. And they're ignoring the parts that says that if you blaspheme against the Holy Spirit, that's the worst thing you can possibly do and that's an unforgivable sin. And they're ignoring the part that says you should abandon your family to follow Jesus. And they're doing a lot of cherry picking too. And we can agree with the conclusions they come to, but still have object to the process of cherry picking they're doing. And so it is this unfortunate thing where I can work in alliance with these people, but ultimately I prioritize evidence and reason and critical thinking. And if they don't, then there is going to be this difficult relationship.
Yeah, I've noticed this a lot, is that sometimes you get into an unbalanced friendship with a religious believer, usually a moderate or a liberal Christian.
Unequally yoked.
Unequally yoked. And the thing I found sometimes is that I would found myself holding back. I wouldn't say certain things. Like I have a good friend who's a wonderful, progressive, intelligent person who is a skeptic about pretty much everything except for this one. Mm-hmm. And I would sometime bite my tongue him saying, oh, well, those people are just reading God wrong, or those people, oh, they're not reading the Bible the way it's intended. And I would hold my tongue, and I found that a lot of religious believers that are very moderate, they seem to expect this kind of a relationship with us, that they're allowed to sort of throw their elbows around saying things that are just plain silly or dumb, and we're not supposed to say anything? Is it possible for us to be honest with them without offending them, and do we even want to try?
I really wish I had a good answer to that question. I think it's a really good question. I have had a hard time maintaining friendships with people who are strong religious believers, even if they are progressive or moderate in their, you know, political views and so on, and even if they're very ecumenical about their approach to other religious beliefs. There is this... I, w- I really wish I had a better answer to that question. I also tend to not get into those arguments with my friends. I get into those arguments on the internet instead. But I tend to not get into those arguments with people that I'm close to, because I have found that they create rifts. And if it's somebody I want a relationship with, then I tend to not go there. But there is this sense of unfairness that they can say what they want to say about their beliefs, and that we can't say what we want to about ours. And a lot of times there's this assumption is maybe not the best word, but for lack of a better one, that when atheists talk about atheism, when we say we don't believe in God, we think all religious believers are mistaken, we don't think there's any supernatural, we think it's all bunk, that's really offensive, that's intolerant, it's bigoted, that it's close-minded, and that we're not being tolerant of other beliefs. Well, you know what? When they say we do believe in God, they're saying that we're wrong just as much as when we say we don't believe in God, we're saying they're wrong. And I think that they don't quite get that for them to, that when they're asserting their religious beliefs, they're contradicting us just as much as when we assert our lack of religious beliefs, we're contradicting them.
But they never hesitate. Most believers don't hesitate at all to say something like, well, God said to do this, or, you know, in casual conversation, just mention something about their belief. Whereas people like us, we always have to debate it in our heads for a minute before we actually say something like, well, I can't pray for you because I don't believe in that, but I'll do something else to help you instead, or, you know, whatever. They don't have that hesitation.
So when you are in the Pride Mart and you're encountered by these people who simply think, oh, they're just angry at Pat Robertson, they're just angry at Fred Phelps, they're just angry at Michelle Bachmann, what is it they expect to hear you say in response? I mean, as an atheist, isn't that by definition not believing in any God?
I can't really speak for them. You would have to ask them what they expected and what they wanted. My sense from the interactions that I've had from progressive believers is that they really want what I call the atheist seal of approval. There's a lot of progressive believers who really want this and who really think they're going to get it. They will come into my blog. Again, I can't speak for the people who are at the Pride Parade because I didn't really engage with them very much. But people who come into my blog and they will say, well, I absolutely agree with you about, you know, X, Y, Z. I agree with you about same-sex marriage. I agree with you about feminism and so on. And, you know, and I'm a believer and here's what I believe. And it's like they have this big smile on their face and they're waiting for you to say, oh, yeah, well, your religion is different. And they will often say that, but my religion is different. And they get very disappointed when I say, well, I still don't think your religion is true. And I still don't think you have any good basis for believing it. And I still, you know, I still think that basing your life on wishful thinking and, you know, ideas that you have zero good evidence for and a lot of really good evidence against is a really bad idea. And I have a couple of theories as to why this is, why they want this seal of approval. I think some of it is legitimately, a lot of progressive religious believers recognize that atheists have really thought about religion, you know, especially atheists who used to believe in religion. They recognize, well, these people have really thought it through carefully. And, you know, there's this study that was just done that showed that atheists know more about world religions than any other religious affiliation. And, you know, and they get that. And so, therefore, if they can get atheists to approve of their religion, then that would be really great. It's like the best, you know, the best thumbs up ever.
That's like if Stephen King says, hey, I really liked your short story.
Exactly. And so I think that there's a lot of that. It's they really want that approval from us. And I think, you know, again, some of this is coming from a good place in that they're coming from this ecumenical point of view, which is that people of different religious faiths can get along. And, you know, but where the ecumenical point of view comes from, usually, is this idea that God exists, but none of us really understands God. We all are seeing a different piece of God. We're all understanding God in a different way, but God is too vast and too complex. And so it's like that parable about the blind man and the elephant. There's the elephant and different people are feeling a different part of the elephant. And so they come to the atheist with this and we say, well, why can't we examine the elephant? Why can't we debate the elephant? Why can't we say, well, actually, I don't think that it is a tree trunk. And here's the reasons why I don't think it's a tree trunk. Why can't we have this conversation?
That's the thing I really have always hated about the elephant analogy is all of the blind men are wrong.
All of the blind men are wrong, and the blind men and none of the blind men. There is no elephant, and in fact, it's in the world of science. What happens is that the blind men compare notes, and they say, "Well, here's why I think it's a tree trunk," and somebody else says, "Well, here's why I think it's a snake," and they compare notes, and somebody else says, "Well, this is why I think it's a fan or whatever it is that the elephant ear is supposed to be," and they compare notes, and they say, "Well, come over here, follow my voice, and I'll show you why I think it's this, and I'll show you why I think it's that," and then they build a ladder and they go to the top of the elephant, and gradually they build up a better picture of what it is. And they let go of their assumptions, and that doesn't happen in religion. And that's this whole ecumenical vision of, oh, we're we're all just perceiving a different part of God, well, why can't we then debate the question? And I think that where a lot of progressive believers are coming from is they have, there's two different approaches to viewing different religions. There's intolerance and violence. You know, there's if you, somebody has a different religious belief from you, you oppress them, you silence them, you go to war with them, you kill them, you torture them, whatever. And of course they don't want that, which they're right. That's bad. And then they have this alternative, which is you just hold hands and you say, oh, isn't that interesting that we all disagree? And, but it's all sort of part of this beautiful tapestry of faith, and we're all going to be tolerant. And by tolerant, we mean we never argue, we never disagree, we never say, I really think you're mistaken, and this is why. And so when they come across the atheist movement, and especially those of us atheists who are engaged actively with trying to persuade people out of religion, they're really baffled because we're arguing and we're disagreeing. We're saying, no, we think you're all mistaken, and here's why. And they associate that with the violence and the intolerance and so on. And what we're saying is there's a third way. There's another option. We can recognize your right to believe whatever you want. We can recognize your right to believe in Jehovah or Buddha or Xenu or Thor or whatever, and you have the right to do that, and yet we think that this is a truth claim about the world, and we can debate whether there's evidence about it, and we can say we think you're mistaken and still respect your right to believe it. And that's something that's really outside of the progressive ecumenical worldview. This idea that the question of God is a truth claim about the world that can be examined and seriously discussed, that's really outside, and they see that as intolerant at its core. And I think that that's one of the main causes of tension between atheist and progressive believers.
Because I've noticed that. I've noticed that a lot of times they brand someone simply saying, I disagree, I think you're wrong, and I don't think you backed up your claims as intolerance, where the language in, say, political discourse over, I guess you could say, this model of economics versus that model of economic, I can say this person is wrong, they're basing us off a lot of bad data, oh, that's awful, or even this person is, they could have crazy to believe this, and nobody acts as if I'm being intolerant, it's just part of a debate.
Exactly, but I think that religion has gotten a free ride for a very long time. There's this assumption that religion is a special category and that you can't, and I think one of the, there's a couple of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that there is no evidence. You know, there, you know, people are just basing it on their own personal faith and the feelings in their hearts and their holy books, which don't have any evidence to support why their particular holy book is the right one. And it's not like a question like politics or science or medicine where you can debate the evidence. There's no evidence. And of course, that's the point that atheists are making. There's no evidence for any of this, and therefore we shouldn't believe that any of it's true. But because there's no evidence, paradoxically, that makes people defend their point of view even more passionately and even more hotly.
Because it's their feelings they're defending, not evidence.
Yes.
You know, if I tell you your feelings are wrong about a situation, you're going to get very upset. That's, you know, pretty common. And, you know, we just want to say that it's the evidence that's wrong, and I'm sorry, your feelings aren't evidence, and you can have them, fine, but they don't count as evidence.
Yeah, people have feelings all the time, and one of the things I've noticed is that sometimes when you do reach that uncomfortable moment, and you do say, I think you're wrong, a lot of intolerance that sounds very much like the stuff from the 700 Club just pours out of their mouth. And I know I remember reading once that you said you stopped reading the responses, the comment threads on Alternet articles that you've posted.
Yeah, well, some of that is just, you know, Alternet is a very large site, and it's a very good magazine. There's some very good writing in it, but the comments tend to be really toxic. And some of that is that the comments on any very large website, they tend not to be moderated very heavily, and so they tend to be toxic. But yes, it's, you just say the word atheism. And Alternet is a progressive, it is a progressive political magazine. Most of the readers of it are progressive, and yet you just say the word atheist, and this outpouring of incredible hostility and bigotry. And it's not even relevant. They clearly haven't even read the article. It's like they've read the word atheist in the headline, and then just whatever associations they have with atheists just spews out. And I think that there's, to kind of sum up here, I think that there's something that's really at the core of this, which is that atheists see religion as an idea. We see it, it's a hypothesis about the world. It's not a very good hypothesis, but it's an idea about how the world works. But I think a lot of religious believers see religion as an identity, and they see it as a personal attack. When we say, we can say, gee, this is a mistaken idea, and for us, it's like you were saying, we're seeing it as like a political idea or a scientific idea or, you know, medical idea or whatever. We can debate this. It's a truth claim about the world. We can debate it. But they feel like it's a personal attack on, like, their ethnicity or, you know, like, on their sexual identity. It's like they feel like you're saying you're bad to be Italian or you're bad to be gay or you're bad to be black or whatever. They see it as a personal attack on their identity. And I think that's something that atheists really need to work on, is we need to shift the discourse so that even believers are thinking about religion as an idea and not as a personal identity.
So, Greta, if somebody wants to read more about what you're talking about and want to check out your blog, they want to see more of what you have to say, where would they go?
Well, the first place to go is the very cleverly named Greta Christina's blog. It's if you're ever getting advice from somebody on how to name your blog, don't ask me. So my blog is Greta Christina's blog, and it's at gretachristina.typepad.com. You can also read my writing on Alternet, which is alternet.org, and I write for them every couple of weeks. Those are the two main places to find my writing, and I'm also on the speakers bureaus of the Secular Student Alliance, and there are YouTube videos of me speaking.
All right. Again, Greta Christina, thank you again for coming to Ask an Atheist. We hope to have you again on in the future.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
All right, and you are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we hopefully have some of your phone calls.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to AskAnAtheist.tv and contribute today.
And we are back. This is Ask an Atheist. We are 253-584-1480. And guess who's joining us in the studio? It is Mr. Sam Mulvey.
Yes. Oh.
Yes. Ha ha ha. Yes.
So welcome back, Sam.
I'm completely Ed McMahoning it today because our guest had to split. So I'm going to call in Ed McMahon to agree with Johnny. And so, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, glad to have your acquiescence, Sam.
You are correct, sir.
Ha! Ha! I think that was actually Alf rather than Ed McMahon.
A bit more Alf.
All right. One of the things we were talking about before, actually during the break, Sam, we were talking a bit about definitions. And
we were doing, yesterday we were up in Seattle for the Seattle Atheists. We had Greta Christina in talking there, and then there was a panel with Emma Crate and a bunch of other people talking about atheism and feminism and a bunch of stuff. And something that came up a lot that we've talked about, we've never gotten to in depth, is the Dawkins scale. And why don't you fill people in about the Dawkins scale?
I'm not a big fan of the Dawkins scale. I am a big fan of Richard Dawkins, who invented said scale.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea is that it's a scale from 1 to 7, where 1 is that you absolutely, completely believe that a God exists, and 7 is you absolutely, positively believe that it doesn't. And even Dawkins himself puts himself at a 6.
Right.
And that the middle ground of that scale, like a 3.5, that would be absolute agnosticism. And again, the reason I have an issue with it is because it's not a left to right scale.
How do you feel about it? And I mean, he has a clear opinion, but
yeah, my thought is that unless you have an absolute perfect middle, I'm not even sure that that can exist, actually. Like, basically a pure agnosticism, a neutral definition, if you want to use D&D terms.
Right.
That I really don't think that there is much room in the middle. I think there's either you believe in a God, maybe with a whole lot of doubt, but you think there is a God, or you think there is no God with a whole lot of doubt. Like, that puts you on either side of the middle of the scale. And I'm not sure that actual true agnosticism, like, I don't know actually exists very frequently. You know, I'm sure there's people that do believe that.
At least not the 50-50 variety.
Yeah, not the 50-50 variety.
That's the issue.
It's a little weird to me.
That's the issue I have, is that the people who call themselves agnostic generally aren't 50-50.
But my objections with this idea really have very little to do with whether or not true agnosticism exists. I mean, you can get rid of that midpoint by making it an odd number so that you can't be in the middle. You have to be one. If you make it an integer count, you have to be on one side of the middle if you make it a 7 count.
Yeah, 3 or the 4.
Right. Yeah, you're going to end up on one side. Clearly, some thought went into this. This is an engineered concept. And I can kind of see the approach and why people like this idea, because it gives you Coke, Pepsi, Democrat, Republican. It gives you that simple spectrum. That
Mike or Joel.
Mike or Joel, yeah. Things that people like to pick. However, on Ask an Atheist, we've been making a big deal ever since, you know, episode 2 about the difference between belief and knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a big thing. I think at least the perspective I've taken, I think, Sam, you're kind of on board with this, is a bit closer to the Nolan chart that the libertarians use to determine
right.
the difference between economic and social policies, where not everything is on a left-to-right scale, that people are a bit more complicated than that. And I think that it's a bit like that. You still have an X and Y axis,
yeah,
but you have belief on one end, and you have knowledge on the other, that I don't pretend to know, but my belief is such that it isn't there, that the evidence just isn't there.
Well, and the thing is about the show, we've been talking about this for a while, is when we talk about belief, and I'll give you my take on it, is that my knowledge is agnostic. I don't know if there is a God. No. I don't have evidence for God. I don't have evidence against God. When we start talking about belief, I don't believe in God, and I don't believe evidence will ever be found.
Yeah, and I actually, as an agnostic atheist, that's, you know, I think how all of us kind of define ourselves. When somebody says, I'm an agnostic, my first reaction is to say, an agnostic what?
Yeah.
you know, that's a question of knowledge, and I would like to know what your belief is. But I know that a lot of people use the word agnostic to mean, you know, they mostly think there's no God, but they think maybe there is, or they mostly think there is a God, but they think maybe not. You know, everybody kind of has their own idea about what it means.
Right.
So I don't want to take away, like, you're not allowed to define yourself as this, and you're not allowed to define yourself as that. Like Greta Christina talked about the bisexual scale the other day.
Right.
That, you know, you can, it's a matter of degree, but you can define yourself however you want. But I think agnostic is not a very good defining word for a position. I think it is, like you said, it's a different axis.
Mm-hmm. It's half of a position. Like, I'm an agnostic atheist, too. I think that the evidence for the existence of a God is so bad that I don't have to get to 100% to throw out the idea. It's the same way, is there a possibility that the President of the United States is a shape-shifting robot from the future?
Yes.
I can't say 100%. I'm not going to dissect, you know, President Obama and see. It's like, okay, does his spine light up when he has sex?
I had this story with a friend of mine about Al Gore being a robot from the future, actually.
Oh, wow.
Because we figured that if there was some apocalyptic thing going on that I needed to prevent by sending somebody in the past, and I needed to send a robot in the past because everybody thought Al Gore was a robot, I would send him in the past. And as my friend pointed out, I would probably give him a cute name, like Al Gore. Algorithm. So I had this test that if I could ever get in the same room as Al Gore, I would say this, and here is sci-fi cred if you catch this reference. Mephisto, sneeze. And if Al Gore sneezes, then I know he's a robot, and I know I built him.
Is this the scenario with or without your overhead narration?
I kind of like the overhead narration, to be honest with you. It seems to improve the Venture Brothers. I liked it in, you know, Blade Runner, so.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I think that a lot of people get into this mindset, and this is completely wrong, that atheists are taking 100%, we don't believe no matter what, dogmatic position. We are not. For me,
most
it's the same thing
aren't.
With... Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like the same thing with unicorns. Can you say with 100% certainty that there are no unicorns anywhere at any time in any place in the universe ever? And you know what? You don't need to get to 100% to say it's not true.
I tell you, when genetic engineering becomes easy, it's going to be very hard to be anti-cryptozoology. Because then they're like, oh, wait, dinosaurs? Yeah, give me 10 minutes. I'll make you one.
Dude, I totally want a Bigfoot. I want a Harry and the Hendersons Harry.
I'm almost willing.
Don't you already have Rich?
I do.
Oh, ow. We love you, Rich.
He's not that Harry.
I wouldn't know. But
this
yeah,
it's just degenerating.
It seems like that's cheating, though. If you just like, yeah, leprechauns are real. Give me 5 minutes.
But what I'm saying is, I'm almost willing to guarantee, because I am sort of an optimist, that at some point there will be unicorns because somebody's going to make them.
And it's going to be a Christian because they want to disprove us saying this right now.
Or maybe somebody who really liked
Screw
my
you,
little Tony.
Ask an atheist. Here's a unicorn.
A lot of work in that. So if you're someone who has a unicorn you'd like to show us, please give us a call. Our number is 253-584-1480. You are listening to Ask an Atheist.
Well, not one of those goats that they mutilate. Not those
no,
unicorns.
No, you could say a rhino or maybe a narwhal.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a kind of unicorn-y.
Wait, narwhals are real?
Narwhal, it's something that's its tooth. It doesn't come off of its forehead. It's,
oh, okay.
It's really like somebody with really bad dental work. Where they just have a tooth that just comes up like a cartoon character hillbilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, like, oh my god, it's a unicorn.
Ouch.
You won't believe what I saw.
So, ow, ow. Oh, you're hurting me. So, what I wanted to ask, you know, the folks out, folks is how would you build an atheist-o-meter? An atheistometer, I don't know what you call
it. We have to come up with a name for an increment of belief.
Yeah, and I mean, a Nolan chart...
Credulometer.
...could work, but maybe not, you know, well, there might be other things, like how do you feel about religion, how do you feel about organized religion, disorganized religion. There's a lot of axes that one could pick, and I'd like to hear... How would you measure yourself if you're an atheist?
Plus, it isn't just the belief, non-belief. There's a lot of, and as we said, the definition, your favorite definition, Sam, of atheism is...
No God.
That's it. Everything else you have, your feelings about religion, your feelings about politics, your feelings about morality, this is stuff you pile upon that foundation. It's just a foundation. It's just a bunch of concrete.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't, it's the same way, it's exactly, like I'm saying, is the opposite of atheism is not Christianity. It's not Hinduism. It's not Islam. The opposite of atheism is theism. And that, just the same way, you really can't say anything about it.
And most agnostics tend to be atheistic. They don't believe in a god. Most of them don't believe in a god and then don't know about a god and then choose to go to religion anyway.
Yeah, it's not 50-50. I'd say that 99% of people who apply the term atheist or agnostic are functionally atheist.
Except for that guy in The Mummy.
Except for that guy in The Mummy.
With all the religious symbols, he just sort of filed through.
We did have one person who called into the show once who admitted they were an agnostic theist.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But here's the bottom line. Do you believe that a god exists or not? If your answer is yes, you're a theist. Any other answer, you are an atheist.
Yeah.
You can be an agnostic theist, a Gnostic theist, which usually means you're just as insane as your theistic counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
But because in the bottom line, we don't know.
Well,
and I like the way that Robert Ingersoll said about it. I'm an agnostic because I don't know, and neither do you.
That's a militant agnostic. I love that.
So if you'd like to help us develop a new method of measuring atheism or theism, let's get that conversation started. And whatever we develop as a group, I will implement on the webpage. I will make it like a Facebook test. And I'd like to shift gears for a moment and say that... on a more somber note, that today's show is dedicated to the memory of Seattle Atheists lifetime member Steve Brown, who passed away after a long battle with cancer. Many community members celebrated Steve's life today at a memorial at Gilda's Club, and donations in his memory can be made at gildasclubseattle.org. He was a friend of the community, he was a friend of Ask an Atheist, a friend of many people who work for Ask an Atheist, and we're sorry to see him go. So,
yeah, goodbye.
Yeah. That brings you to this. What do you say in those situations?
You really don't. I mean, I think the best thing to simply do is, instead of talking about the person, talk about the people left behind, because those are the people that you're really trying to help.
Yeah.
I don't try to... I mean, a lot of people expect the platitudes, always in a better place, stuff like that. People know that I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, you ask them, what do you need?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best thing is, what can I do for you? Or, I'm so sorry. Here's a hug.
Sorry is real. Sorry is true. And that is an emotion, and I'm feeling it.
And if I ever lose somebody, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody to take advantage of that moment to just like, by the way, have you heard about my timeshare with Jesus?
Jeez.
That's what it comes. If you've been to a funeral where somebody you love has just moved on, and
one of Rich's friends, actually an old mentor, passed away recently, and some of his former friends actually put up on his Facebook page, well, aren't you worried now about your soul? What happened to your friend? What about you? Aren't you going to believe?
Really?
I mean, that's the most heartless, cruel thing I could think of. Hey, one of your best friends just died. Why don't you come join my club?
That's about what we got time for. Our special guest today was Gerda Christina. Our host was Mike. Deanna is with us. I'm Sam. Our music is by Chris Coleman. As usual, I produced the episode. My production assistants were Kyle Hepworth and Jimmy Blacken. Call screener was Rebecca Friedman. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM media production, and you can see us at askanatheist.tv. Have a good week.